Okay, today is Shiva Sabha Tammuz, as we know, and on the source page, you have the Pasuk that's really, yeah. Chaim Aryeh ben Esther, should be before Shlaim. In the daf, in the page that's entitled Multiple Reflections Upon Fast of Tammuz, you have that? Yeah. So the first source number one is from Zechariah Perichet. Did I get that one right? So Yirmiyahu Nunbet. So if you look at the last source on the page, the Shiva Sabha Tammuz carries with it several tragic events. It's not just one event, but there's also a very, very hopeful and positive ending to the story of the fast of the fourth month, which is the month of Tammuz, as envisioned by Zechariah Hanavi. Zechariah Hanavi lives in the beginning of Beit Sheni. And he already knows about, very well knows about, the Churban, the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, and knows about the four fast days that were instituted to commemorate the Churban, the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And they are given by names of the months. They're called the Tzom HaRevi'i, the Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fourth month, which is Tammuz, the fast of the fifth month, which is Av, the fast of the seventh month, Tzom HaShvi'i, Tzom Gedalia, and Tzom HaSiri, which is the fast of the tenth month, which is Tevet. And the message is, Yiyu LeBeit Yehuda LeSosonu Simcha LeMoadim Tovim. They are going to become great days of Yom Tov. Now that's a very nice ending to the four fast days. Except the only question is, when exactly is that supposed to happen? So there are differences of opinion, but Rambam adopts the opinion, it's messianic, it's Yimot HaMashiach. Days of Mashiach, these days are going to become Yamim Tovim, so they're going to remain on the calendar. But at the moment, we are dealing with events that took place on the 17th of Tammuz. So we just jump to source number three and see it in the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Chamishat Varim Eru Et Avoteinu B'Shivasar B'Tammuz. Five things happened on the 17th of Tammuz, and five on Tisha B'Av. So then it goes one by one. The Shiva Sabra Tammuz, on the 17th of Tammuz, the first five occurred. Nishtabru HaLuchot, the Moshe Rabbeinu shatters the Luchot. That's going back to the Chumash. Parshat Kitisa, and all you have to do is figure it out, that Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai in Chag HaShavuot, and there's a question, you know, did he go up on the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan? It may not have thought about this, but the date of Chag HaShavuot is never mentioned in the Chumash. There's no biblical date for Chag HaShavuot. It's measured by 50 days after the counting of the Omer. Whenever you start Sfirat Omer, the 50th day is Shavuot. And in the days that there was Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctification of the moon, by literally sanctification of moon as a judicial act, so the month of Nisan could have carried 29 days or could have carried 30 days. The month of Iyar could have carried 29 days or 30 days. And hence, Shavuot could have come out on the 5th of Sivan, the 6th of Sivan, or the 7th of Sivan. In our calendar, it always comes out on the 6th because Nisan always has 30 days, which means the 2 days Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and Rosh Chodesh Sivan, there's only 1 day Rosh Chodesh, which means Iyar always has 29 days. So it's pretty balanced. It comes out in the middle, and that is Shavuot is always on the 6th of Sivan. However, with regard to the story of Moshe Rabbeinu going up to Har Sinai, this caused a problem for Bnei Yisrael, who erroneously began the calculation in the middle of the day where Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, where the 40 days began counting the next day. And hence, at the end of the 40-day period that Bnei Yisrael thought it ended, they panicked and they thought Moshe wasn't coming, and the end is known. They made the Egel. And only on the next day does Moshe Rabbeinu come down, and he shatters the Luchot and so on and deals with the issue of the Egel. So that's the first matter that happens on the 17th. The next day, on the 18th, Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up to Har Sinai to plead the case that Kadosh Baruch Hu should give Am Yisrael a second chance. And he wins that case. And that ends at the end of the month of Av. And then comes the 40 days of what we call Yamim Noraim. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and you have a month of Elul and 10 days of Tishrei, and Yom Kippur is, in a sense, Matan Torah all over again. That's when the second set of the Aseret HaDibrot come down, the Luchot of the Shni'im, the second set. Beseder, so we have this 120-day period broken down into three equal 40-day slots. So that first one ends tragically, Shiva Sabbat Tammuz. The next item is Butal HaTamid. which means the daily sacrifice in Beit HaMikdash was abolished. Now, obviously, this is leading up to the Churban. You shouldn't think for a moment that the Babylonians came into the Beit HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, destroyed Beit HaMikdash, but the day before, it was business as usual. It was not business as usual at all. But the Korban Tamid, and we'll see in a few moments, it wasn't just the Korban Tamid. It was all the sacrificial activity of Beit HaMikdash comes to an end, to an abrupt halt, and there's no longer Avodat Beit HaMikdash. No longer Beit HaMikdash service going on after Shivas Abed Hamuz. And the next item is Hufka Ir. The walls were broken through. Now, in days of old, all defended cities by walls to capture it, what was done is the enemy would lay siege around the city and wait patiently to starve you out. If you have no supply of food and water, it's only a question of time and how much patience you, the attacking force, has. And in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, he had a full 2.5 years because the siege was lay around Yerushalayim on the 10th of Tevet, 2.5 years before the Churban. And what happens when the water supply and the food supply dwindles, then there's internal strife. People start killing each other literally for the morsel of food that's left, and they do the job of the enemy. They, you know, when they go in, 90% of the work is already done. Most people have died from starvation already. The others are completely exhausted, and it becomes less of a big deal to take them over. Something like that happened with the attack of the Russians taking over Warsaw in 1945. They did not come into, they did not advance into Warsaw because they felt, why should we fight it out? Let the locals kill each other out first, which is exactly what happened, and then we'll be able to just walk in. So this was something that was known in ancient days. The Romans did the same thing 400 years later, and they lay siege around Yerushalayim. So the breaking through of the walls means now is where the capturing takes place. And it took a few weeks to capture Yerushalayim. That's the third event. The Sarafa Fustamus et Torah. There was an event of a public burning of a Sefer Torah. Who's Mr. Afustamus? First of all, you can hear it's a Roman name. So it probably doesn't have anything to do with the Babylonians. But the Gemara tells us, in very humbly, we don't know. And that's a moral lesson too. Because I'll say, Limad Lashoncha Lomar Eini Yedea. Train yourself to say, I don't know. People ask you a question. You don't know. Don't, you know, worry about your authority and your pride and everything like that and just sell an answer that has no basis. Say you don't know. And say we'll go look it up together. There's nothing wrong with that. So Chazal said, Gemara, it means Masorah. It's a tradition. What exactly happened? I don't know. The Gemara says they don't know. And same thing for the last event, Hamid Selam Behechal, a statue was put up in the Beit HaMikdash. When? Who did it? What type of statue? There was some suggestion that this was done already after the Churban, but in the location of the Beit HaMikdash, perhaps in the pre-Christian era, there was still paganism. Maybe it was already the Christian era. They put up a cross. We don't know exactly what happened. The Gemara says we don't know what happened, but it's regarded as one of the five things that happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz. With regard to Tisha B'Av, that's the continuation of the Mishnah. We're not going to do that now. But I want to focus on these five events. Because the Paitanim, the poets, who the Middle Ages, medieval poets, who authored the Slichot, had this Mishnah in mind when they composed their poetry to try to give some feeling and sense to what happened on Shivas Abed Tammuz. And it's very interesting to see how this was poetically put together. And furthermore, we also get a feeling that decisions had to be made about differences of opinion. So let's get to the first issue of difference of opinion. If you go back to the first source from Yirmiyahu chapter 52, it says, B'chodesh ha-revi'i, which is the fourth month, Tammuz, B'tish'a l'chodesh, on the 9th of Tammuz. That was a week from Shabbat, a week ago. Yesterday was the 16th of Tammuz. So a week before was the 9th of Tammuz. What happened on the 9th of Tammuz? V'yechazak ha-ra'av be'ir, the hunger, the famine grew strong. There was no bread left. No, there was no food left. And the walls were crashed through. One second. The walls were crashed through on the 9th or on the 17th. Now, this pasuk is repeated, by the way, in Malachim Bet Perikafei, which, according to the Gemara in Maseret Baba Batra, Yirmiyahu is the author of that section too. So Yirmiyahu records for posterity a date, the 9th of Tammuz, the day the Babylonians crashed through the walls. So if you look at source number four, the Gemara picks up on this. One of the five things that took place on the 17th of Tammuz was Hufka'ir. If you just could see it in the third source, we saw this on the last line. In the middle, Hufka'ir, the walls were crashed through. So Gemara says, Hufka'ir b'shivasahavi? Was that true, that the walls were crashed through on the 17th? Vaktiv, but it says clearly in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, b'chodesh ha'ravi b'tisha l'chodesh, on the 9th of the month of the fourth month, v'yachazak ha'ra'av b'ir, and immediately afterwards it says, v'tib b'ka'ir, and the wall was crashed through. So how do you resolve a tradition that the wall was crashed through on the 17th, where the Pasuk explicitly tells you the 9th? So Gemara says, Omer Rava, one of the great Amoraim, he says, lo kasha, no problem. Kan b'rishona, kan b'shnia. We have two batei mikdash to deal with. There were the Babylonians and there were the Romans. So the Babylonians crashed through the walls on the 9th, as it says in Yirmiyahu. But the Romans crashed through on the 17th. So when the Mishnah says, Hufka'ir, the wall was crashed through, the city was breached on the 17th, it refers to the second Churban, not the first Churban. That's what the Gemara says in source number four. Source number five tells us something interesting here, most interesting. It quotes a source that identifies the Tzom HaRavi'i of Zechariah, where he said, oh, these four fasts are going to be Yamim Tovim. So he obviously meant something when he said the fast of the fourth month. So the Gemara says, what did he mean? Zeh Tisha B'Tammuz. He meant the 9th of Tammuz, Shebo Hufka'ir. Because Zechariah is not going to be talking about the second Beit HaMikdash. He lives at the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash. So he's obviously referring to the four fast days in the aftermath of the first destruction. So the Gemara says, this happened on the 9th of Tammuz. And Tosfot immediately says, and the Gemara, knowing the Gemara as we just read it, Hainu Barishona, that wasn't the first time around, the first destruction. Ava Bashniyan, the second Beit HaMikdash, Hufka B'Yud Zayin, the walls were crashed on the 17th. Mishum Hachi, therefore, now Tosfot starts speaking. This is the Ashkenazi Balei HaTosfot. Mishum Hachi, therefore, Avdinan, we fast the 17th of Tammuz. We fast the 17th of Tammuz. In other words, we have here a tradition that today, that once upon a time, the Tzom HaRavi'i, the fast of the fourth month, meant the 9th. But in fact, today we don't fast on the 9th, we fast on the 17th, commemorating the fact that the Babylonians, that the Romans, I'm sorry, crashed through the walls leading to the second Beit HaMikdash. Now the question is why? Why did we prefer the second over the first? Or better yet, why don't we have two fast days? Why don't we fast on the 9th and on the 17th of Tammuz? So there are two answers. If we look at source number 7 in Shulchan Aruch, Afelgav, in spite of the fact, Dichtiv Bakra, in spite of the fact that it says explicitly in the Pasuk, B'chodesh ha-Ravi'i b'tisha l'chodesh hufka'ir, that the wall was crashed through on the 9th, Ein mit'anim b'tet bo, we do not fast on the 9th of Tammuz, Ella, but rather, the Yud Zayin, only on the 17th. Why? In spite of the fact that the walls were crashed through by the Babylonians on the 9th of Tammuz, because leading to the second Beit HaMikdash, the walls were crashed through on the 17th, Tiknu, our Chachamim established, Litanot B'Yud Zayin, to fast only on the 17th, Mishum D'Churban Bayit Sheni Chamir Lan. It is more significant for us the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash than the first. What does that mean, more significant? Chamir means heavier, more serious. We suffer directly from the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash and only indirectly from the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. So if we have to pick and choose, the Shulchan Aruch says, we picked the second Beit HaMikdash version of crashing through the walls, and hence we observe the fast on the 17th only and not on the 9th. Okay, this is something that's logical. But what about the question, why not having both? So it's the Mishnah Brura That's the Chofetz Chaim in the last line, source number 8, who answers that question. He says, V'lo ratzu l'gzor gam betet. Chachamim didn't want to add another fast day on the 9th of Tammuz and on the 17th of Tammuz, and then we already have on the 9th of Av. The ein matrichim al tzibur yoter midai. There's a concept in halacha called Torah hatzibur, overburdening the people. That would be too much to ask for. There's a limit of how much you can demand from people to go through a day of fasting. All right, the 17th, 3 weeks later, Tisha B'Av, we can handle that, but you want to stick on another one? In Hebrew, we say mugzam. It's exaggerated. No, that's not going to work. Torah HaTzibur, by the way, is an interesting halachic factor. For example, we just read Parshat Balak, and the Gemara says in Masechet Brachot, Daf Yud Bet, that Chachamim actually wanted to include the words of Bilam into our daily Kriyat Shema. So instead of having 3 parshat, we'd have 4. We'd have Parshat Balak, all those beautiful psukim about Am Yisrael. Matovu alecha Yaakov mishkinotecha Yisrael. Wouldn't it be nice to say those psukim every single day? But it's not one pasuk. It's a whole parsha, right? So the Gemara says, Mishum Torah Chatzibur. You know, people go to work in the morning. We have to take that into consideration that they got 1 foot. Somebody called once Elaine with the Shabeach, Tfilah Taderech, because you have 1 foot out. You got 1 foot out the shul. You have to be careful with people, the Torah HaTzibur, not because once you overburden, then you can cause the whole ship to collapse. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful about Torah HaTzibur. And that's used in a variety of instances where the halakha chooses to abbreviate because of Torah HaTzibur. So here too, Mishnah Berurah says, it would have been too much to ask of people to have another fast day in Tammuz, that's 9th and the 17th, and so on. 2 weeks ago in Shul on Shabbos, which was the 9th of Tammuz, I took off on this Mishnah Berurah to expand it one step further, not challenging Chalilah to Mishnah Berurah, but just adding a dimension of understanding to it. There's a thing called crisis management in halakha. There's routine and there's crisis. I mean, I'll prove it to you. The Rambam believes that this statutory prayer, there's a mitzvah to daven once a day. Mitzvah to daven once a day. The Ramban believes that there's a mitzvah to daven when you're in crisis mode. Now, the Rambam also believes that when you're in crisis mode, you're supposed to daven, except that it's a different form. He calls it za'aka. In the framework of the laws of Ta'aniyot, he talks about crisis tefillah. But in Hilchot tefillah, he's talking about standard tefillah. Now, everything is Baruch Hashem, you got up in the morning, you're healthy, nobody's fighting anybody, you know, you have food on the table. It's not that there's nothing to daven for, right? You just mentioned, so there's always somebody to daven for somebody. But, you know, by and large, I got up and it's not an emergency now. So the Rambam says, nevertheless, you still have to daven once a day, min haTorah. From a biblical point of view, you have to daven once a day. And Anshei Knesset Gedolah put 3 frameworks of davening into place, but these are ritual, routine davenings, as opposed to emergency or crisis davenings. Ramban says that all of the daily tefillot are rabbinic, but crisis tefillah is doraita, is biblical. Now, you can have a crisis moment once in 20 years or 5 times in one day, depending on circumstance. So the Torah never tells you how many times you're going to have a crisis. So that's called crisis moment, and it's different. It's very, very different. You can have modim anachnu lach, 3 times a day. Val nisecha shebechol yom imanu, val niflotecha v'tovotecha, shebechol eit erev avokev tzarayim. All these wonderful things that God does for me every evening, morning, and afternoon. And you can even think about them for a moment. You know, you woke up. Oh, Baruch Hashem, you know. No small matter, because, you know, some people don't wake up. So we woke up. Some people, 2 in the morning, crushed to their deaths. So, you know, it's biyado afkid ruchi, Be'et Ishan Va'ira. You put your hands, you put your neshama into Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands when you go to sleep. And you hope that tomorrow morning you're going to wake up. And you say, Modeh Ani L'fanecha, Beseda. So you have this routine saying thank you, Bodim Anachlu Lach, we say 3 times a day. And then there's a special thank you. We call it Birkat HaGomel. Birkat HaGomel is special. It's the verbal parallel to bringing a Korban Todah in Beit HaMikdash. There was such a thing as a Korban Todah in Beit HaMikdash. Thanksgiving offering. So Gemara says, Arba'at Zrichim Lahodot. There are four individuals who are obliged to give this special thanks. So it talks about somebody who traveled the high seas, somebody who traveled the desert, somebody who was sick and recovered, and somebody who was in prison and was released. And you have to realize that all four scenarios, there's one headline. They were all pikuach nefesh situations, all four. In days of old, traveling the high seas, more than 50% never made it to the other side, to their destination. Why? Ships broke up on the high seas from storms, ships were pirated, and you never really knew if you're going to get to your destination, arrive at your destination safely. Deserts, there were all kinds of natural enemies out there, whether it was ferocious animals and snakes and scorpions and also bandits out there. You got it to the other side, Baruch Hashem. You all owe a korban todan bet mikdash. If somebody was ill, I mean deathly ill, and you survived, certainly you owe gratitude and thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And in those days, if you know anything about the Roman dungeons, most people never came out of there alive. This wasn't a jail like in Kela Be'er Sheva, where you know, you get three meals a day, and if you want to go to the Beis Medrash program, you can do that also and get a you have a library and so on. It wasn't like that at all. It was sitting in a dungeon, you're usually, you know, shackles, and you just sit, you just lie there, in all likelihood you died. Like Marama Rutenberg, by the way. And we have kinnus from him on Tisha B'Av. So this was Asir Shishtachrer. And the modern questions come up about saying Goymel today after plane flights, airline flights, and so on. So there's a dispute between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik on this. Rav Moshe Feinstein saw this also in the context of traveling the high seas, and he felt there would be a need for Goymel, and the Rav said if everything is okay and nothing happened to the plane, it's simple, it's just a mode of transportation, and it's not pikuach nefesh. So you can take it both ways. And same thing with regard to illness. A person has a common cold, and after a week, having taken, you know, some cups of tea and had some chicken soup, and he feels better, I don't think there's a need for Goymel there, because that happens to everybody. But the Rav always said if a person had any type of surgery with full anesthesia, who required Goymel, and any type of infectious disease where there is a chance that the person may not pull out, for sure there's a need for Goymel. But I remember speaking about pneumonia. 150 years ago, somebody had pneumonia and recuperated. For sure, you had to bench Goymel. Today, if a person is healthy, fundamentally healthy, I'm not talking about somebody who's sickly, who gets pneumonia and no likelihood may even die from it. But if a person is fundamentally a healthy person and gets pneumonia, so after 4 days, 5 days, he's going back to work, they call it walking pneumonia. He's still walking around with it, but he's taking antibiotics and he's going to be okay. So there it is, a long shot if you have to say Goymel. So that's what you have in Thanksgiving. You have the difference between routine Thanksgiving and special occasion Thanksgiving. So too, we get to the issue of the Churban. We talk about having a Ta'anit. Ta'anit, by its definition, a fast day, is part of crisis moment. And crisis moment does not necessitate, does not warrant overusing it. You use it according to its proper dosage. And don't overuse it. The example that I gave with Birkat HaGomel was because I do feel that some people do overuse it. I'll give you an example. I have a sister who lives in Chashmonaim. And Chashmonaim, there are a lot of fellows who work in high tech, and they would go back to the States to work there. Today it's less prevalent because now you can do all the work online. You don't have to go anywhere. But to go back to their offices in America, wherever it is, and come back to Chashmonaim Friday morning, and then on Monday morning leave again. Almost like the American bungalow colonies where the men would go for the weekdays, you know, to work. And on Shabbos, my sister said there was a line of 30 guys by Shvi to say Goymel. So the Rav put an end to it because Torah HaTzibur, that was really burdening the tzibur, exactly what I said before. So what did he say? He said, he didn't say, tell them they don't have to say Goymel. He said, one will say Goymel and they'll all answer Amen, and it's for everybody. So you try to get out of it. So my sister gave it an interesting name. She called it HaMoadon HaGomel HaMatmid. You know, there's the thing that the Matmid Club is the frequent flyer club. So she called it the Goymel Matmid, the Moadon, the club, HaGomel HaMatmid. Those who are in the Goymel Matmid club, they're always saying Goymel. The problem is that somebody who every single Shabbat is saying Goymel for the same thing, what happens to the Goymel? What happens if you're really going to need goimel for something? It's not going to have any import anymore. I had this, I mentioned in shul the other week, that I remember davening, I was a member once in Young Israel of Kew Garden Hills, and I'd come visit my father-in-law, my in-laws lived there for a while, and I saw after davening, they were saying two Pirkei Tillim. Okay, so I thought somebody was sick. Yeah, I'm a nudnik, so I ask, and why are we saying Tillim? So they said, for the matzav in Eretz Yisrael, that particular day, everything was fine. So I said, how long, since when you're saying this? Since the Yom Kippur War. I said, since the Yom Kippur War, you're saying two Perek Tillim for the matzav in Eretz Yisrael? You know, you have to somehow say, Ad Kan, the matzav is okay now, and hold off with adding, what are you going to do if, God forbid, something really is in trouble? They'll say, we'll add a third Perek. I mean, it may sound funny, but you have to be careful with special additions, because then it loses its impact. And that's what the Mishavur is saying, that you cannot have an extra fast day, another fast day, and that loses its impact. So let's just hold off with the two. So what do we have, just in a summary at the moment? You have the ninth of Tammuz as being a fast day after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, but it shifts to the 17th, after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. That's what we have at the moment. Now the Tosfot, going back to source number 5, throws in something interesting. In the second line, V'hach Breita Matnitan B'Yerushalmi Garsina Bay. The same line of the Breita is found in a parallel source in the Talmud Yerushalmi. But what does it say there? It doesn't say that the Babylonians crashed through the walls on the 9th of Tammuz, but rather the Babylonians crashed through the walls on the 17th of Tammuz, just like the Romans did 500 years later. The Avagah, but one second. But you have a Pasuk. So it's number one, you have a Pasuk that tells you what was the 9th. The Avagah, in spite of the fact, the Chtiv Bekra, it says specifically in the Pasuk, Tish'al HaChodesh, on the 9th it happened, on the 9th of the month, here comes a bombshell. Kilkul Cheshbonot HaYusham. What is Kilkul Cheshbonot? The calendar was messed up. What does it mean, calendar was messed up? They lost sense of time. And Yirmiyahu knew exactly the date, and it was passed down through the lines of communication of the oral law of Torah Shebaal Peh. But what he writes in Tanakh is the wrong date, what they thought, so that we, 2,500 years later, should understand how tragic the circumstances were, that they lost sense of time. Now you may ask yourself, how could that happen? Well, all you have to do is speak to a Holocaust survivor who was in a camp for 3 months or more, what it means to lose the sense of time, where they had no idea when was Shabbat, when was Yom Tov, because every day was the same thing. And if you don't have a change in one's routine, then there's no special day any longer. And I have heard testimony from Holocaust survivors. Kilkul cheshbonot, that is the most dehumanizing thing that can happen, that you lose your ability to be sensitive to time. And Yirmiyahu wanted that we should feel it so many years later. So he deliberately writes the wrong date. But when did it really happen? It didn't happen on the 9th. It also happened on the 17th. So if it also happened on the 17th, what happens is we have two traditions. Did the Babylonians crash through the walls on the 9th, as it explicitly says in Yirmiyahu? Or did the Babylonians crash through on the 17th, but what Yirmiyahu wrote was a deliberate distortion, kilkul cheshbonot? Those are the two options that we have right here. How does that manifest itself in the piyutim, in the sources of the piyut, of the Slichot? So let's go to the page of the Slichot. You have it, it's in the Rosenfeld edition in Hebrew and in English, so you'll be able to follow this. The author is a famous poet, Spanish poet, Shlomo Ibn Gabirol. Oh, you thought Ibn Gabirol was a street in Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim, right? But he was a real person. He was a great poet. Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, right? 1021 to 1056, 11th century personality. She'ein Esa, let's just read a little bit and you'll get the flow and then we'll translate. She'ein Esar, Asher Nimsar Biad Bavel V'gam Seir, Lecha Yehemeh Zekameh V'yitchanen Kiven Seir, Yom Gavar Ha'oyev Vatibaka Ha'ir. Now these five words, Yom Gavar Ha'oyev Vatibaka Ha'ir, are going to repeat itself after every stanza. It becomes the refrain of this particular poem. The day that the enemy was victorious and the city was vanquished. Yom Gavar Ha'oyev Vatibaka Ha'ir. Now let's go back to the first. You know what? I'm just going to read a few lines and highlight what I'm going to point out first. Lezot ikaf ve'espok kaf biyom chamesh pizaruni. What is Yom Chamesh? You hear the number five. So what does the poet have in his mind? The Mishnah of source number three of the five things that happen on Shavuos Batamos. And he says, Val regel ha'egel haluchot yitza'uni. Well, something about the golden calf, something about the luchot. Even if you don't understand every word here, but what is he saying? He's going to talk about that which is mentioned in the Mishnah of nishtabru haluchot, that the luchot, the tablet, the Ten Commandments are broken. The gam hishmid hatamid, the korban tamid was destroyed. Umeatzato kla'ani, velachad sar ir miftzar, ubasoger heviani, v'husam elil beheichal kalil, and an elil, a statue, a deity, was put up in the sanctuary. Vidatcha tsar ba'esh hiv'ir, and datcha means your religion, which means your law, was burnt by fire, which was one of this incidents, saraf afusmos datara, yom gavar ha'oyev vatibaka'ir. So what did the poet do? What did Ibn Gabriel do in this particular stanza? He gave us poetically all five incidents. One was the luchot were broken. The second was the korban tamid comes to an end. The third was that there was an elil, a deity, a statue put up in the heichal in the sanctuary. The fourth was the burning of a sefer Torah. And the fifth was, what was the fifth? Something might be missing here. Hufkai. Oh, lachadir. No, I'm sorry. Umatzatot kila'ani v'lachad tsar ir miftzar. That means, and uvasoger heviani. So that the walls will crash through. All five are here. All five in this particular stanza. But when does it happen? Is it the first Beit HaMikdash or the second Beit HaMikdash? So we go back to the first stanza. Let's read it very slowly. She'ein ne'esar. We ask God. She'ein is a phrase that shows up in many tefillot. She'ein v'ratzon. That God should turn to us. Because galut means God, as if to say, is not turning to us. Geula, redemption, means God is turning to us. There's hester panim and gilui panim. She'ei, we're asking the Kadosh Baruch Hu to turn to us. Ne'esar, those are in captivity. Who's in captivity? We're in captivity. I'm Yisrael's in captivity. Who put us into captivity? Asher nimsar, we were given over to Biyad Bavel, the hands of the Babylonians. Vigam Seir. Who is Seir in the Torah? Edom. And who is Edom? Well, it's Esav, but who's Edom in the Chazal language? Rome. So the poet is saying, we were given over twice by Bavel and to the Romans. And what happens? Yom Gavar Ho'oyev Vatibaka'ir. On this day, the city was vanquished. So Ibn Gabirol has taken a stand that not only did the Romans conquer Yerushalayim or crash through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz, but the Babylonians also did. It's the same day. Yom Gavar Oyev Vatibaka'ir. Which means, he's taking a stand on the dispute between the Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi. Where in the Talmud Bavli, the Pasuk is read as is, that the Babylonians crashed through the walls on the 9th. But in the Yerushalmi, you've got this idea, I was going to say wild idea, of Kilkul Cheshbonot, that actually the 9th is not real. It was fabricated by Yirmiyahu for a good reason. But when did it happen? It happened on the 17th. So according to the Yerushalmi, just as the Romans crashed through on the 17th, the Babylonians crashed through on the 17th, and Ibn Gabirol picks up on it. He picks up on this particular point of view. That's significant, as we'll see, with towards the end. But I just want to flash back to a slichot that you don't have, and you don't have to have it, because all you have to hear is the refrain. But the refrain switches every line. I'll just read the first one just to get a little bit of a tasting. We said it this morning. Atanu lecha yotzer ruchot, berov avoneinu kavdu anachot, gzerot atzmu v'rabutz richot. And now starts the refrain. Ki bishivasar b'tamuz, because on the 17th Tammuz, the following happened. And each stanza, the following happened, is different. Nishtabru haluchot. Okay? That we know. That's the Mishnah. The luchot were broken. The next stanza. Ki bishivasar b'tamuz, nisrifa ha-Torah. Torah was burned. Third stanza. Ki bishivasar b'tamuz, ho'amad tselem b'heichal. The statue was put up in the heichal. Fourth stanza. Ki bishivasar b'tamuz, nifka'a ir. The city was crashed through. The fifth stanza, ki bishivata v'tamuz, butala tamid, the korban tamid, was abandoned. Now, one second. Why is this poet bringing the five occurrences out of order? If we look at the Mishnah in source number three, chameshet dvarim, five matters happened on the 17th of Tammuz. The order is the breaking of the luchot, let's call that number one, butala tamid, number two, hufka'ir, the crashing through the walls, number three, the burning of the Sefer Torah, number four, and the putting up of the Tzelem in the Heichal is number five. Okay, that's the order. Yeah. So he has the Heichal before the burning. That's a good point. Okay. But I'm back here at this particular one. If I look at what I'm just read now in this particular Slicha, the order is one, which is Nishtabru Aluchot. The second one is four, Nisrafa HaTorah. The third stanza is Ha'amad Selem Be'echal, which is five. So it's one, four, five. The fourth stanza is Nifka'ir, which is three. And then he gets back to number five, Butala Tamid, which is number two. It's a very weird order. One, four, five, three, two. Why is he doing that? So now I continue the poem, and it becomes an expansion of the last thing he just said, butal hatamid, because he wants to make a point here. He says, the next line is, ki bishevasar b'tamuz, nivtelu ola v'zabach. What was abandoned and abolished were the korbanot ola and shlamim. The next line is, ki bishevasar b'tamuz, gormu lanu avonot. It caused us sins. Why? Because there was no longer Korban Chatat and Korban Hasham. What was left was the sin. And the next line, in case you missed the whole point, Ki b'shevasar v'tamuz, nivtelu ha-korbanot, all the korbanot. What is the poet doing here? He's telling me from the five things that happened on Shevasar v'tamuz, you want to put your finger on the real reason why we fast on the 17th of Tammuz after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash? It wasn't because the Babylonians crashed through the walls, even if they did it on that day. It was because Avodat Beit HaMikdash comes to an abrupt end. And Avodat Beit HaMikdash is indicated in the Mishnah in two words, Butal HaTamid, but the poet goes and expands it. It's not just, you think that they didn't bring the Korban Tamid in the morning, Korban Tamid in the afternoon, but a woman can bring a Korban Yoledet, or you can bring a Korban Todah, or a Korban Musaf of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh was brought. No, it means everything was abandoned. Ola v'zavach, the Korbanot Ola and Korbanot Shlamim, the Korbanot Chatat v'Asham, everything was abandoned. Beit HaMikdash came to, activity comes to an abrupt end. That's what it means. And that's the tragedy of the Shevasar b'Tammuz. The fact that the building was burnt, destroyed 3 weeks later, that's a different story. We mourn that too. But if you want to know what Shevasar b'Tammuz was all about, it was this particular facet of the Khurban, the abolition of the sacrificial activity. Now, this becomes immensely, immensely important when one considers the role of Yerushalayim in the first Beit HaMikdash and the role of Yerushalayim in the second Beit HaMikdash. Let's go back to the Slicha that you have on your page. The last lines, where it begins with B'nei Beit Zvul, about four lines from the bottom, we ask God to rebuild the Beit Zvul. Beit Zvul is a nickname of the Beit HaMikdash. It's one of Beit HaMikdash nicknames, Beit Zvul. To rebuild the Beit Zvul, V'hashev gvul, and restore our borders. You know why? There is no sense of Beit HaMikdash without an Eretz Yisrael. Beit HaMikdash does not sit there in a vacuum. If we don't have borders of Eretz Yisrael occupied by Am Yisrael, I love that word occupation, then there's no Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, Hashev Gvul, which borders? HaKarmel VaHabashan. Where is the Carmel? Where is the Carmel? Yeah, but north. North what? What direction? Northwest. It's on the coast. It's by Haifa. The Carmel is by Haifa, right? What ancient seaport do you have opposite the Carmel? Akko. Akko, for sure. I mean, Yafo is also a seaport, but Akko, for sure. And where is the Bashan? Where is Eretz HaBashan? Yeah, where? North, south? It's east of Eretz Israel, but it's the Golan. It's the Golan. And I'll tell you, the word Bashan, you know, there's a snake called a python, right? Right, then there is a path that's called the merchant's path. When people went from the east, let's say from Iraq area, which was Babel, to Eretz Israel, they didn't come through modern day Jordan because that was completely desert and you can die, literally, you never make it. So they had to go in a place where there was oasis, where there was some water supply. And it was a little bit roundabout, a little bit ups and downs and so on. The road curved. So it looked like a snake. It was like a snake path of some sort. And the word Bashan, do you know that in Hebrew and in Semitic languages, a bet switches with a pay and a shin switches with a taf? I'll show you, prove it to you. How do you say three in Hebrew? Shalosh. How do you say three in Aramaic? Tlat, taf, lamet, taf. How do you say eight in Hebrew? Shmona. How do you say eight in Aramaic? Tamnaya. What's a mituman? Mituman is an octagon in modern Hebrew. What's a mituman is an octagon, and a tamnun is an octopus, right? And it's the taf. It's the Aramaic form of shmona. That's what it is. So if you take the word Bashan and respell it, putting in a pay for a bet and a taf for a shin, it spells pitan, which is python. And that's what Bashan is. It's the land of the snake path. So it's the northeast. And that's where Yirmiyahu is telling us in this coming Shabbat Haftorah, Mitzafon Tipatach Ha-Ra'ah, the bad news is coming from the north, not from the east. Because the Babylonians didn't come from the east. They came from the northeast, from the Syrian area. Mitzafon, from the north, Tipatach Ha-Ra'ah. And that's why the Paitan says, what we have to have restored are the boundaries that the Babylonians crashed through of Eretz Yisrael, and that was the Bashan. And where did the Romans come from? Were they paratroopers and brought them in? No. How did they come? They came from the sea. They came from Akko. And therefore the Paitan says, we have to have our borders restored from the Carmel and the Bashan. Get rid of the Babylonian incursion and the Roman incursion, free Eretz Yisrael from these invaders. And he says, V'ayin p'kach, v'nakom kach, and God should take revenge. From whom? Me Eitzer u'midishan. Who is Eitzer and who is Dishan? These are codes. But if you remember Parshat Vayishlach, in the Alufei Esav, there's a whole listing of different families of Esav. And one of them happens to be the Aluf Eitzer, and one happens to be the Aluf Dishan. Why does the poet lift out of context these two families of Esav? Because one represents Bavel, and one represents Rome. Who's who? The Babylonians, their foreign policy, when they took over a land, they had an issue to worry about. And that was supply route. You send an army over. It's not like today. You can airborne supplies. You had to force the local population to feed the army. So when the government, when the Babylonians took over a country, they had an interesting policy. And that is to leave the local authority functioning. Do you know the Babylonians were here in Eretz Yisrael 18 years before the Churban? Who's the king? Oh, it was the fourth year of Jehoiakim. He's king another 7 years. And then there was Yechoniah for 3 months. And then there was Tzidkiyahu for 11 years. So what do you mean? What does that mean? That means they were puppet rulers. Not only that, but even after the Churban, the Babylonians thought, give it a shot, have Gedaliah be the governor. They didn't want to take care of the local affairs. They gave autonomy to the Jewish leaders as they gave to other countries. But it came as a price. What was the price? House the Babylonian soldiers and give them to eat. House give them to them to sleep and give them to eat. That's the price. And you can have autonomy here and run your Beit HaMikdash and run your life and so on. And it worked for 18 years. What were the Romans all about? They came with fire and burnt everything down. When you go to archaeological sites and they tell you we just hit Rome, how do you know we just hit Rome? They'll show you the charred remains of in the walls of old buildings and so on. You have this in the old city, the burnt house. You know you went down to Rome because you got there. Etzer means, from the word otzar, means treasure. What does it mean, treasure? It means supplies. It means supplies. Am Yisrael had to supply the Babylonians. And means we gave them lodging, and obviously we couldn't send them a bill. And we gave them food, and we couldn't send them a bill. And now the Paitan is saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ayin Pekach, open the eyes. V'nakam kach, it's now time for payback. For what? For Etzer? Ho-ho, there's a big bill that the Babylonians owe us for all that hotel space and food that they got. And the Romans for burning down our buildings. What is deshen, dishan, in Beit HaMikdash? Trumata deshen, the cleaning out of the ash from the menorah or the mizbeach. Dishan means the burnt remnant. So Etzer is a reference to Bavel, and dishan is a reference to Rome. And then comes the punchline. Shvot Ilem, God should judge the one who's a mute. Who's the mute? We're the mutes. Because we did the Avirot, so we can't tell the Kadosh Baruch Hu we didn't deserve it. But nevertheless, Az Yishalem, it's a phrase straight out of Parshat Mishpatim. Az Yishalem. Somebody's got to pay. There's got to be justice here. Who's got to pay? Straight out of Baba Kama. Hamav'eh v'hamav'ir. These are two words of the four Avot Nezikin. Arba Avot Nezikin, Ashor, Bor, Mav'eh, v'hever. What is Mav'eh and what is Hever? Hever, we know exactly what it is. It's fire. It's Esh HaMazik. And that's Rome. But what's Mav'eh? It's a big, big machloket. But in the Yerushalmi, and I'll call your attention again, Ibn Gabirel is working with Yerushalmi here because he's got the Yom Gavar Ha'oyeh Batibaka ear in accordance with Yerushalmi that the Babylonians also crashed on the 17th. Mav'eh in the Yerushalmi, if you look at the source page, on the second side, source number 16, Mav'eh ki yav'er ish sadeu okerem v'shilachet bi'iro ze haregel, an animal tramples and trespasses. And then it says, ze hashen, this is the teeth, that means food was nibbled by the animals. According to the Yerushalmi, if somebody has an ox and he lets it go into the neighbor's field and he tramples vegetables that are growing, that's damage. Or if the animal nibbles and starts eating the cabbage that's there, that's damage. You got to pay for it. It's called shein v'regel. You're paying for the teeth and you're paying for the feet, which means you're paying for the food and you're paying for the trespassing. And that's what Ibn Gabirol is accusing the Babylonians of being, the mav'eh. They trampled us, they trespassed our property, and they ate our food, and they are the etzer, and we're giving a bill to them, and they're going to pay up one day. This is what Ibn Gabirol says to the Babylonians. And to the Romans, it's the other av hamazik. It's mav'ir, it's fire. They caused the dishan, they caused the destruction by fire, and they're going to pay for the rebuilding as well. And we believe this. Yom Gavar Ho'oyev Vatibakai Ir. So this was said 11th century. It was 1,000 years ago this was written. And I look at this and I see all the foreign aid that Israel received in the last 72 years, and it received no small number of foreign aid. Can this not be the fulfillment of payback time? That Am Yisrael should be, Eretz Yisrael should be rebuilt by nations that are somehow representing in the modern day and era Babel and Rome on some level? And here it is. I'm not a Novi to make that justification. I just threw it out in the air for, as they say, chomer lemachshava, fuel for thought. But it is, I think, an interesting observation to see how the Paitan, the poet, is working with halachic material and setting it up perfectly, perfectly between the Rome and the Babel. Just to end this, what was Yerushalayim in the first Beit HaMikdash? It was the end product of taking over Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua didn't have Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim comes into the picture in the days of David HaMelech, where until David HaMelech, it was an enclave of the Yevusim. And David HaMelech, you know, liberates it. And then after locating the place, he gets an hechsher, if you may, from a Navi, that yes, this is the place where the Torah said, El HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham. Yes, this is the place. But the Ramban tells us in Parshat Re'eh that when the Torah says, L'shichno tidrishu vat Hashem, you shall seek it out, the one who did it, in fact, was David HaMelech. And that's why even though Shlomo, his son, builds the Beit HaMikdash, it's referred to as Sukkot David, HaRachamanu Yakim Lanu Sukkot David HaNofelet, based on a pasuk in Amos, which is the Haftorah of Parshat Kedoshim. Akim Lanu Sukkot David HaNofelet, right? It's a great niggin from Kalbach on this for Sukkot. Akim Lanu Sukkot David HaNofelet. What do you mean Sukkot David? It wasn't the Sukkot Shlomo. Hey, David HaMelech found the place. So it's on his name already. It's registered in the tabu under David HaMelech's name. Sukkot David HaNofelet. So it's the end product. What was the purpose of the Yerushalayim in Bayit Rishon? Purpose was to take, those who studied American history know that the American government actually started as 13 original colonies. And then it became the United States of America. The first flag had 13 stars. And then ultimately they expanded it. I grew up, I was a boy, a kid, I remember 48 stars. Alaska and Hawaii were not part of the United States. They were only added afterwards. So they became, you had to buy new, the ones who did it were the people who made flags. So you can buy new flags, you know. So they said, but you had here 12 Shvatim. And as you see in Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Shmuel, each Shevet is doing their thing. They don't always cooperate. Sometimes they even weren't more than antagonistic. The purpose of Beit HaMikdash was both political and religious to unify Am Yisrael into a cohesive whole. So before Beit HaMikdash, you can set up a shtibel in your backyard and bring korbanot. It was called bamot. It was called Bamot. And people liked that so that even when there was Beit HaMikdash, they didn't want to stop it. You see, the Nevi'im are yelling for hundreds of years. Rak HaBamot Lo Saru. But there was a time that was necessary because there was no Beit HaMikdash. So you were allowed to do it. But then Yerushalayim was there, and from then on, no more Bamot. And you have to have Avodat Hashem in one place only, in Yerushalayim. And the seat of government is going to be in Yerushalayim. David HaMelech moved it from Hebron. He was king for 7 years, Hebron. Moved it to Yerushalayim, 33 years. And from then afterwards, as Menachem Begin of Shom said at the signing of the peace treaty with Egypt, 1979, Jerusalem, D.C. But they thought, what are you, crazy? It's Washington, D.C., right? No. It's David's capital. David's capital. You got a standing ovation just for that. It was a Kiddush Hashem. Begin. Oh, only Begin come up with that. Right? David's capital is Birat David HaMelech LeNetzach. That's all. And so that was Yerushalayim, its purpose in the first Beit HaMikdash. In the second Beit HaMikdash, the whole enterprise of Shivat Zion starts with Yerushalayim. It's the beginning where Nehemiah and Ezra, they come back and build the wall of Yerushalayim. They build the wall of Yerushalayim. And then afterwards, they expand Eretz Yisrael outwards, like we had here in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael before the state, in the old city. And then, you know, you have different neighborhoods, the Mishkanot, you know, where all the expanded neighborhoods outside Yerushalayim, building Yerushalayim, it's still in a state of expansion, as Yeshayahu 4 predicted, Harchivi Mekom Oalech, right? The boundaries are going to expand, seeing it mamish on our own eyes. So they because Yerushalayim was once very, very small. The idea of Yerushalayim and Bayit Sheni begins with Yerushalayim. Whereas once the Rav used an analogy from nuclear physics, you know, you can get energy out of the atom by either exploding the atom, that's called fission, it all blurts out, or you can fuse it all together, and that's called a hydrogen bomb. It's called fusion. You bring all the atoms together in a certain complex, and it also releases even more energy. So the Rav said that the Bayit Rishon was about fusion. Yerushalayim purpose was fusion, to bring all the Shvatim together in a cohesive whole. And Bayit Sheni, it was actually fission, to cause from Yerushalayim an explosion of building communities outside Yerushalayim. It went the other way. It's very interesting. But ultimately, according to Ibn Gabirol, the poet that we said this morning for Slichot represents a point of view of the Talmud Yerushalmi. And this is fair game, by the way, in tefillah. You know, you might say, well, if there are any halachic ramifications, you know, do we accept the Yerushalmi point of view? Usually not, by the way. Sometimes yes, but usually not. But that's not the issue. When you write a poem and you want to reflect an idea, it's fair game to take a halachic point of view that might not even be lehalacha lema'aseh. And that's okay. But it's clear that Ibn Gabirol is using this particular point of view, the Yerushalmi, both at the beginning and at the end. Yom gavar ha'oyeh bati b'ka'ir. And having said all that, I go back to the pasuk in Zechariah, where it was a shaila that Zechariah received. It was now beginning of Bayit Sheni. And it's a legitimate question. Do we continue fasting Tisha B'Av and Tammuz and Teveit and Tzom Gedalia? I mean, the Beit HaMikdash is now beginning to function. It was ha'efke etzom ha'chamishi. That's the phrase. It's a shaila, a halakhic question that's asked in Tanakh. And the answer is beautiful. Tzom kol ma'ashem, tzom ha'rvi, tzom ha'chamishi, tzom ha'sri, tzom ha'asiri, yeh le'beit yudah l'sason u'simcha l'modim tovim. Okay, when? It's such a beautiful answer. We don't know when. We don't know when. The Mefarshim are struggling. When? When did he mean? Did he mean by Cheney? Did he mean by Shlishi? Something in between? It's not clear. But one thing Zechariah does say, he gives us a little bit of a clue. The end of the pasuk, three words. E'amet v'shalom e'havu. When truth and peace get together, and harmony get together. And I believe that this is a reflection on the leadership of Moshe and Aaron. Moshe was Moshe emet v'torato emet, and Aaron was ohev shalom v'rodev shalom. And sometimes these two types of leaders can conflict. Because if you're an absolute truth person, then you don't tolerate differences of opinion, which is really the basic ingredient to harmony. If you don't accept somebody else's opinion, then you're never going to have harmony. So if Aaron's willing to accept other opinions, how does that blend with Moshe Rabbeinu's emet, which is, you know, absolute truth? The answer is it's a struggle. But you see that Moshe and Aaron got their act together. And the Gemara tells us that Aaron and Moshe are equivalent in the sense that it was interdependent. Both of those personality types of leaders were absolutely necessary. So Zechariah is telling us, when we have our Anshei Emet and Anshei Shalom get their act together, Ha'emet v'shalom ehavu, then these fast days are going to become Chagim. So we still have our work cut out for us, but nevertheless, it's an optimistic note that these fast days will, Mir Tzashem, become great days of Sason and Simcha, and hopefully, B'mera B'yamin. Yeah.